5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, ignition, liftoff.
Hi everybody, I'm Brian Clapp, Director of Content for WorkinSports.com, and this is the Work in Sports Podcast. I think over my years in the sports industry and in business in general, I have a pretty good BS detector. I can usually tell when someone is less than they project themselves to be, or they are all flash and no substance. These people exist everywhere. They live by the fake it till you make it mantra. They try to blind you with their smile or their louder than life personality or their command of the room. But deep inside, when push comes to shove, they don't have the ability to get the job done. As someone who has interviewed hundreds of job applicants over the years, this has always been one of my big fears, that someone will sell me on their image rather than their substance and ability. I'm always very leery of people that are all flash because the cynical side of me comes through, fully expecting them to be nothing more than an act. I always picture like a clown at a kid's party who's all energy and excited and engaged and funny and the kids love him. And then you see him in the back room smoking a cigarette and looking at porn on his phone. It's all just an act. You can't afford to be fooled by these people. You have to have a good BS detector and question things, which is what I did leading into my interview with Jesse Cole, founder of Fans First Entertainment and owner of the Savannah Bananas Collegiate Summer League baseball team. Jesse has a bright yellow tuxedo that he wears to every game. He has all these crazy events and things that happen at the game that are different than you'd see anywhere else. He's all energy and all over the place. And I'm telling you, my radar went up as being, just speaking honestly here, I thought he was a gimmick. The yellow tux and the over-the-top personality, it can't be real. It can't be authentic and genuine. And he can't really know what he's doing. I saw all this glitz and glamour and dancing grannies and thought to myself, his 15 minutes of ESPN fame will run out and the Bananas will be out of business in 5 years. I know that makes me sound like a bad person, but I'm just not that trusting with flashy people. I've seen it and been let down by it too many times. But I was wrong. Now, I am self-aware enough to say I am wrong. And when I identify that I evaluated somebody wrong or inappropriately or whatever, I came to the wrong conclusion, I go back and I think, okay, what was wrong in my process? What did I do wrong to evaluate this person? And what I'll tell you is when I go back and say, okay, I misjudged Jesse, what did I do wrong in my process? What I see is that Jesse mixes the enthusiasm and spirit with underlying business principles that work. Sure, he does things differently and never saw a camera or a microphone he didn't love. But I mean, in a lot of ways, the over-the-top promotional elements and the uniquely yellow wardrobe is just the cover of the book. And we all know not to judge a book by its cover. Jesse's book, and I mean it in a figurative sense, not literally his Amazon best-selling book, Find Your Yellow Tux, is chock full of substance and vision and eagerness and fire. So here he is, Jesse Cole, owner of the Savannah Bananas baseball team. And I can't tell you enough, listen to the details and the method that he has used to accomplish all that he has. Hey, Jesse, how's it going?
Outstanding, doing well.
So I have to warn everybody before we get started into this, for all you listening at home, Jesse and I spoke yesterday to kind of prepare ourselves for this conversation, and we are two guys that speak fast, think fast, have a lot to say, so this is going to move quickly. If you want to, you might want to slow down the speed. I wouldn't speed up your playback. If anything, you might want to slow things down. Is that about right, Jesse?
Yeah, we could probably break the record for most words spoken in this interview. So this is exciting.
Yeah, exactly. So let's start at the beginning. So I'm really curious about this. You are a pretty young guy, and yet you're owner of a baseball franchise. Kind of take us from the beginning of this, like when you came up with the concept of, I want to own a baseball team, and how it got to where you are now.
You know, I love that question because it's like, hey, how do you own a baseball team? You know, you're in your 30s, and it's like, very simple answer, take on a lot of debt. That's the easiest way to own a team. But long story short, I was 23 years old when I got a job as a general manager in Gastonia, North Carolina, as the Gastonia Grizzlies. And I'll never forget that first day. I showed up to the ballpark, and I found out the real numbers. I found out that the team had only averaged about 200 fans a game.
Ooh.
I found out that the team had lost over $100,000 a year, and I found out that there was only 260 $8 in the bank account, and we had three full-time employees, and payroll was on Friday. That was my first day.
And that's what told you, I want to be an owner someday? Like, you really want to take that on?
So what I realized, I was like, wow, this is really exciting. And this is terrible, but also very exciting, because I think whenever you take over something, it's not the best situation to take it over when it's doing very well. So okay. I thought, wow, we are at rock bottom. You know, we're one of the lowest performing college summer teams in the country. So as general manager there, I was fortunate that I went to the owner and said, hey, we can no longer be a baseball team. We have to make it about entertainment. And so we came up with the concept of having dancing players and grandma beauty pageants and just crazy promotion. And he gave me the ownership and said, Jesse, we've got nothing to lose. Let's do it. So as a 23-year-old general manager, I started seeing myself as the owner then. You know, literally, yeah. I couldn't pay myself for months. So I was treating it like an owner. And then from there, we were fortunate to have tremendous success and, you know, start selling out games and averaging over 2,000 fans a night. And in 2014, you know, my wife and I, who wife's in the business, she worked for Ripken Baseball and then started working with us with the Grizzlies. We bought the team in 2014 and jumped into ownership then. And then just about a year later, we said, let's keep going. And we bought an expansion franchise and moved it down to Savannah, Georgia. So right now we own two teams, and it's been a crazy 10 years, to say the least.
Okay, so I have to imagine that it was the Grandma Beauty Contest that kind of set things going on the right stage. Who was the original winner of the Grandma Beauty Contest? Do you remember?
Oh, it was Gertrude. She was 87 years old, and I'll never forget. Yeah, her name was Gertrude. That's like the perfect name of someone that would win that.
It is. Like, it was either that or Ruby or something. Yeah.
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah. Francis. What was great about Gertrude was that we had a question. It was, if you could be on the cover of one magazine, what would it be? And she said, of course, Playboy. And so she won with that answer.
Okay, so when you decided to buy and then move the Savannah team, what was it you were inheriting? If this Gastonia team had tons of debt, wasn't selling out tickets, you had $236 in the bank, and it didn't take over until you started to change your entire philosophy of how you're going to run things, what were you getting when you bought the Savannah team? Was it similar, or was it already on a better path?
Well, it was a completely different situation. So, you know, I in 2014, at the last game of the year, I proposed to my wife in my yellow tuxedo in front of a sold-out crowd, and thank goodness she said yes, because that would have been very awkward.
Yes.
And then a few days later, she surprised me with a trip to Savannah. So we went to Savannah and went to the ballpark, and there was a minor league team there, the Savannah Sandnats. There's been minor league baseball there for 90 years, one of the oldest ballparks in the country. And we went on a Saturday night. It was 80 degrees, perfect night, and there was less than 500 fans. And what the former team said is they wanted a new stadium or they were going to leave because they couldn't have success. So they didn't get the new stadium. We found out they were going to leave. They ended up going to Columbia, South Carolina, and we reached out to the city and started the relationship and basically said, hey, we want to come in here. And the city took a chance on us and let us get a lease at the ballpark, and we came in on October 5th, 2015, starting with nothing. I mean, literally nothing. Everything was taken out of the ballpark. The phone lines were cut. The internet lines were cut. We were working on a picnic table inside an old storage building. And that's how we started, just about 2 years ago.
So, okay, two things come to mind when you say that. Initially, my first response is I'm annoyed by the previous owners going into a blaming kind of campaign where they're like, their mentality was, oh, we can't survive here. We can't possibly thrive. There's no way we can sell this out. And it's a stadium problem. And they were into blaming right away. And yet you came in and had a totally different approach to how to fix this problem. So I always feel like there's two different types of people. There's those that blame everybody else for what goes wrong in their lives. And then there's other type of people that look at it and say, this is a problem I can fix. And they take an aggressive standpoint. Have you always kind of been, have you always kind of been that way where you've always kind of seen a problem and said, I can beat this?
You know, it's a lot more fun. You know, you think about it, I tell everyone, what's your story? So when you ask anybody, do they have a good story to tell? And a great story to tell isn't coming into somewhere where it's really successful and making a little better. The great stories, the ones that everyone tell over and over again, when you come in with something and it's unbelievable adversity, unbelievable challenges, and you overcome them. So yes, we always look for that.
Yeah.
And it's more fun. And you know, how do you build a great and amazing culture? you tell stories and you have stories to tell. And our whole staff in, you know, 2 years in Savannah going into our third year, we've had zero turnover because we're a part of something much bigger than ourselves. And that story, which is a long story and how we've got to the success, that's what's really built this.
Yeah, we'll definitely get into your hiring and your retention plans and all those kind of things. We're going to get there. I have to go back for a second, though. You said that you wore the yellow tuxedo before you owned the Savannah Bananas. Now, I always thought that the yellow tuxedo was tied into the brand of the bananas. This has been a thing for you for longer than that?
Oh yeah, an amazing coincidence. I've worn it since 2012. I own six of them. I've slept in them. I've proposed in them. I'm probably the only returning customer ever at brightcolortuxedos.com.
Probably.
And the reality is the Gastonia Grizzlies had yellow in their colors. It was just black and yellow. So I said, you know, black is way too hot in the middle of the summer.
Right.
So I found a yellow one, back in 2012. And when we named the Bananas, it was just perfect.
Yeah, it worked out perfectly. You could use your tuxedos still. So okay, you take over the Sand Gnats, right? And did you immediately rebrand them as the Bananas? And how did that happen? Because I do feel like minor league, especially for minor league and collegiate league baseball, that mascot, that brand becomes such a big part of it. Right?
100%. And to be clear, we didn't take over the Sand Gnats. The Sand Gnats were gone. So basically, the minor league team, they went to Columbia, they rebranded.
Right.
So
okay.
We came in, fresh slate, nothing. And so we did a name the team contest, and we were very specific to the community. We want outrageous, we want unique, we want different, because I believe this normal gets normal results. And if you're trying to do something normal like everyone else, you're not going to succeed. So we got 1,000 suggestions, and I think 995 of them were all normal, like seagulls and ports and anchors. And then one woman suggested Bananas, and just one. And I saw it, and we looked at each other, and we were like, yes, and
there
we started
it is.
Envisioning.
Yep.
Yeah, we're like, oh, we could have a senior citizen dance team called the Banana Nanas. You know, we could name our mascot Split. You know, go Bananas. We could have banana beer. We could have a promotion called Banana in the Pants. I mean, we thought about all these crazy ideas. And like the branding and marketing opportunity, it fits us because the name of our company is Fans First Entertainment. And what is fun? What is unique? And what is different? So we rolled the dice and decided to go with Bananas. And you know, not many people know the 6 months before we became the Bananas was probably the toughest personal and professional time my wife and I and our staff have ever had, because no one believed in us, no one gave us a chance, and it got as bad as it gets.
Okay, so how do you keep that then? You've got a staff, you've got debt, you've got this project in front of you. How do you keep like positive momentum, positive belief? How do you not go to sleep at night having doubts this can actually work?
Well, I didn't sleep at night. I mean, what happened? I'll never forget the phone call I received in January. And basically one of our staff members said, we overdrafted our account. We have no money. We're completely out of money. And my wife and I were at my friend's wedding, and we drove back, and she turned to me. We were only 5 months into our marriage. She said, we have to sell our dream house. So we had our dream house in Charlotte. We sold that. We had to empty out our savings account. And we said the only chance we have of saving our team in Savannah and our employees is we got to go all in. So we bought this one of the ugliest houses you could ever imagine. You talk about fixing things up and you know, looking at opportunities. I walked in and walked immediately out and said, no way, we're going to buy this. We got an airbed. We lived on $30 a week on ramen noodles, and we just invested everything we could into Savannah. And the reason was no one believed in us. For 5 months, we were this college summer team coming after a professional team, and no one believed us. They were like, oh, sure, you're going to be fun. Sure, you're going to be different. They've been burned so many times by just a baseball team that it got so bad that we knew we had to create attention and choose a name and show the brand that we get people talking. And that's when everything changed with Bananas. And to answer your question, the staff was, I mean, you got to find people that care. You know, that we can train them. Our staff cared so much. I remember our president's face when I told him that we had emptied out our savings account. He was devastated. And he was devastated because he felt like he let us down. And he would do anything to keep the staff motivated to work hard. And, you know, it's moments like that that I can visualize his face, that you know everyone's in it together. And that's what we've built. We've built a culture that everyone cares. I mean, right now, I'm on the phone with you, but our entire staff and their spouses, best friends are on a cruise that we took care of them because, you know, we believe in moments and creating a family. And that's what they're doing right now. And that's how you build something bigger than yourself. yourself, and I think that's how you grow a business.
Yeah, so I can't wait to talk more about that, but let's keep on. I have a bit of an outline here. I want to keep things somewhat focused.
trying to keep an outline I know. So you go through like the expected with me is very, very
well. Slow. No, this is a funny thing. I haven't asked a single thing off of my outline yet. Like I'm basically like I'm flowing with you and just kind of feeling whatever comes into my head, and then you talk about your tuxedo and there we go.
Well, you know, Brian, my motto is whatever's normal, do the exact opposite. So if I can get you off your outline, that's a win-win for me.
I can sense that. I hate having an outline, to be honest with you. Maybe I should just throw it out.
Let's have fun, man.
I know, right? So, okay, how big was your staff when you originally took over? I think you said it was 4, right?
Yes, it was my wife and I and 4. And now I'm going to be very clear. 3 people just out of college graduated that May, and then 1 president who was 24 years old.
so senior staff.
So that was our staff taking over this brand new franchise in Savannah.
So you name it the Bananas, you have the contest, it gets named the Bananas, you're feeling energized, you got all these marketing ideas popping into your head, you can see what's going to happen. But how do you, like, was it instantaneous with the community once you started doing these things? Was it a slow build?
Let's be clear. As soon as we came out with Bananas, yes, the world took notice, but how was it locally? We saved all the letters, emails, tweets. The owner should be thrown out of town. You guys are an embarrassment. You'll never sell a ticket. I wasn't sleeping after the announcement, and people didn't even know. The week before we got our first shipment of shirts, Bananas was spelled wrong. There were too many N's. I mean, you know, whatever could go wrong did go wrong. But what happened is, everyone was talking about it. I mean, literally it was number 1 trending on Twitter that night ahead of Donald Trump, and he had a debate. I mean, literally it was on SportsCenter for 15 minutes. And so merchandise started selling all over the country. And then again, my wife and I had to max out our credit cards because we ordered too little
merchandise.
Exactly. So what happened was we got criticized tremendously locally, and everyone said you guys are going to fail. But here's the big key, and I always say this, you know, attention beats marketing 1,000% of the time. And what happened was everyone was talking, so at least now people knew who we were.
Right.
And now when our salespeople and our ticket people called, they at least heard of the team. Whether they laughed and said they'll never work with you, at least they heard of us. And what we did is all those terrible remarks, everything that people said that we'll fail, we'll never sell a ticket, we won't last a year, we saved all those. And we held all those, and we looked and said, guys, they're going against us. Let's believe in ourselves. We can do this. It was a rallying call. And then a year after, when we were fortunate to have our success and sell out almost every game, we did a mean tweets video where we literally, our whole staff read all those mean tweets. And, you know, it's so funny. We were reading them. Half the people that said those negative things became season ticket holders with the team.
And they probably have a t-shirt, a hat, a jersey.
Oh, you better believe it. You better believe it. So, you know, I think people need to be able to embrace criticism more. I think if you're getting criticized, that means you're doing something different. And if you're playing it safe, you don't win. So I think it's a different way of looking at business. And everyone tries to play the safe route and take the generic names. And we went crazy, and we kept going crazy. Everything we do is crazy. And I think that's what's helping us be successful.
Well, okay, so you have 4 staff members, most of them not really necessarily qualified or experienced. As a team starts to get some momentum, and you start to get some more attention, and you start to have these needs that crop up, were you like in panic mode of a different sort now, where you're like, oh crap, now we have to actually manage this product, now we have actually a lot to do and we don't have the staff to do it, how do we fill these gaps?
You know, you learn figuring it out. So for instance, as soon as the merchandise orders started happening every couple seconds that first night, I mean, we had to bring in temporary staff. And, you know, we brought in girlfriends and wives of our staff. We literally bought good people we knew. And what was interesting, you know, a girlfriend of Danny, and Danny was a kid who didn't have a job with us but was so persistent and said, I want to work for us. So we gave him a job and put him in sales. Then his girlfriend and now fiance started working with us, and then we hired her full-time to be over merchandise and community relations. So we started hiring pretty quickly after we needed it. It wasn't just hiring and hoping that it would work out.
Right.
We needed it. And so then we went quickly. We started, you know, adding people left and right to take on the demand. And I think that's a lot of businesses. They hire 10, 15 people. They're like, all right, I hope we get the sales. We were getting the sales, and then we were hiring from there. It was just a different approach.
Yeah, you said
we didn't have the money to invest.
Right.
Yeah, we didn't have the money to invest in the beginning. And then once we started selling, we could invest more.
So, okay, now let's take a step back. What is your kind of approach to hiring? Because I've said this before. I had one of my mentors told me, he said, the most important thing you will do in your entire career is hire good people. Like, of course, there's other factors of your job, but you need to be really good at hiring. Having the right staff makes all the difference in the world. So what is 100%. Your kind of approach to hiring? How do you find those right people?
100%. I'll tell you the number one thing for us that I've seen, and we get hundreds of applicants, and we are one of the few teams that are constantly hiring. I mean, we now have 14 full-time. We're hiring 3 more full-time right now. I mean, we're going to be 2025 soon within the next year or two, just with our Savannah franchise. Here's the one thing, and I tell everyone this, persistence. If someone shows me persistence in trying to get a job and responsiveness, that shows a lot. And I'll give you 3 examples quickly. We had this person, Reginald, who disability special, and basically what he did, he called every week trying to get a game day staff position with us, called every single week, and he's like, when's the job fair, when's the job fair?
Yeah.
And we answered, and he came to work, and he became our most beloved game day staff member. Literally, he picked up trash around the stadium and exit greeted fans. Amazing. Another person, Mark Edish Shark, literally, he was our announcer. He started reaching out to us in October before the season even started, and every couple weeks, here's what I'm going to do. What that shows is unbelievable. Caring, you know, you care so much, you have this drive to be successful, and you want to work for someone.
Mm-hmm.
So many people shoot out a resume and just hope they'll hear back. I want you to reach out over and over and over and over again. That shows you're passionate. That shows you want to be for it, want to work for us. And that shows once you get the job, you're going to continue that passion and persistence. So, you know, those two. And then Danny, who worked so hard to get a job for us full time, what did he turn out to be? Our best salesperson I've ever seen. What he did this past year is he raised over $100,000 for local nonprofits through our fundraising program. That is amazing.
Yeah,
he single-handedly is one of the reasons why we saw out almost every game, because of his effort and his leading of the ticket sales department. So, you know, that's the thing that I look for. And then, you know, stand out. So everyone, they send a resume. You know, who cares? What we look for is we ask for future resumes. So that's us showing how we're different. We want to see what you're going to do in the future, not what you did in the past. And we ask for a video cover letter.
Okay.
The reality is everything we're doing is movies now. I don't want to just see something on a paper. I want to see you come to life. I want to see your energy, your personality, how fun you are. So send a video cover letter. What happens is we get about 300 applicants, say, for a position. Then we write back to the ones we like.
Yeah.
And we ask for that video cover letter and the future resume. And I bet you right there we get only 10% of those, because
yep,
it's more work. And if people can't put the work in to potentially try to get a job with you, they're not going to be great when they join you.
Yeah, that's for sure. If they're not going to put in the work to get the job, then what good are they going to do when they actually have it?
100%. 100%.
Yeah.
And I think the final thing that's most important is you got to be able to understand what your core beliefs are, what your values are, and you got to make sure that that person fits that. So we're very clear. We call it the fans first way, and that's always be caring, different, enthusiastic, fun, growing, and hungry. And we actually have them write why they are all those characteristics, how they fit into that, and show that in their video. Because if you can't fit the fans first way, you're not going to fit well with us. And I think if a company doesn't have core beliefs or a mission or a value system, I think they're behind, and I think they're not going to really fit with you. There's a reason why we haven't had turnover, because we're finding people that fit our core values and our belief. So all three of that happens before we even start the really interview process.
Right.
That's just to get to the interview process, and then that goes on for a month or two, because most companies, what they do is they hire fast, and then they have to manage more. You know, what we do is we hire slow, so we manage less.
Oh, makes perfect sense. So now, when you first are looking at your, there's probably a formula that an owner would follow and say, okay, I need 5 salespeople, I need 2 people in marketing, I need 3 people over here. Since you do things differently, did you approach even the what you needed kind of process a little differently? Like I know we talked a little bit about some of the specific roles that you have on the staff. What was your approach to what you actually needed
100%,
to
fill? 100%. I think one of the biggest, I think, challenges that companies look for is that they want well-rounded people, all right? Yeah, they want well-rounded people to take well-rounded positions.
Yeah.
We try to hire and bring people all in on their strengths. And I think that's such a key, because think about this. No one can be great at everything. I'll tell you right now, I am the worst operation person in the world. My staff makes fun of me so much. Like, I can't carry things. I can't zip tie things. I can't put things together. So every time that I'm trying to do that, we are losing as a business.
Yeah.
What should I be doing? I'm the crazy guy in the yellow tuxedo. I should be out promoting, marketing, you know, talking to people. That's what I should be doing. Most companies, when they bring on interns, they're like, oh, you'll be involved in a lot of different things. We used to believe that, but I'll tell you 100%, I believe the opposite. Right now, we have a full-time videographer. All he does is produce videos. And how has it worked out? In the last year, we've got almost 2 million views on our videos, and that's what he does. He's amazing at it. He doesn't touch anything else.
Yep.
You know, we have our director of first impressions. She doesn't get involved in sales. She is all about that first impression from people coming in our office, from handling the calls, and from the first impressions for the people we hire and our vendors. You know, everything we specialize, and it makes us so much stronger because we're becoming amazing at certain things, and then you have the best possible business. So I believe going all in your strengths and stop trying to be so well-rounded, become amazing at something that you love and that you can be the best at.
I mean, it sounds like you lead by example too, is that you're out there, you're putting in the work, and you're showing everybody that there's a positive result that comes out of hard work. So minor league baseball and even the your you know, college baseball league is notorious for high turnover. People come in, they work for a little bit, they get a spot on their resume, and then they move on to something that they think is bigger, better, whatever. You said earlier that you have near zero turnover. How does that happen?
Well, you know why? Here's the thing. Most owners, most managers, they feel their employees work for them.
Yeah.
I and our president and our staff feel the exact opposite. We work for you guys. So our job is to empower, develop, and help our people grow. And it's a whole different system of looking at it. When most people are like, they see people as a cog to their system, how can they help bring in more sales? This is the way most businesses, especially in the sports industry.
Yeah.
You know, they're looking, how can I sell more tickets? How can I bring in more revenue? It is the opposite for us. And I'll tell you, here's a great example. 3 months ago, we let our entire staff come up with their own salaries. Everyone.
Okay.
This is, even if they were with us for 6 months, they came up with their own salary. And what do you think happened? It was a very scary day as an owner.
I was going to say, I have no idea. That sounds really scary.
They asked for substantial raises. I'm talking 25, 30% raises.
Okay.
And, you know, we looked at them and said, all right, you know, this is your team. You're a part of this. We believe in you. We love you. We say those words. We care about you. And we know that you'll be accountable and responsible for that. So what has happened in the last 2 months, 3 months since we've done that?
Yeah.
Our business is up almost 250%. And that's in our third year, which
okay.
Most times you see kind of the honeymoon phase off. It's because you're treating people like owners. You're not treating people like they're a cog in the system. And what's been built from this company and Fans First Entertainment, I say it all the time, it's our fans are not the people on the outside. Our fans are the people that work for us, that are literally out there wearing our merchandise, calling their parents when great things happen. So take care of them. They're our biggest fans. And when you take care of your people, they more than you can even imagine take care of the business.
See, I would have been the idiot that like labored over that question. Like if you asked me like, okay, so what would you like to be paid? I would have labored over it for like weeks and then come back with like a 5% bump over what I had because I would have felt bad asking for more. So it sounds like your staff was a lot smarter than I am.
Well, I think they value themselves and
yeah.
They know the business is successful. They know we sold out every single game, and they know what's great is that they know if they're going to ask for that, you know, whether it's a $5,000-$10,000 raise or whatever it is,
yeah.
That they're going to hold themselves accountable. And I think that's the reality of how all businesses should think. And these kids, and I'm calling them kids, they're adults, but you know, 23 to 26 years old.
Yep.
And they have
hungry.
That responsibility. How do you think they're going to be in 5-10 years from now, whether they're with us or with someone else?
Well, that's it. It's almost like being a parent, where the more responsibility sometimes you give your kids, you feel like they actually start to mature and make smarter decisions faster. And if you can do the same thing with the early employees and say, you're going to be trusted with this, but don't do it wrong, because then I'm not going to trust you anymore. Then you actually are building a stronger relationship with them as well.
100%.
Yeah.
But I mean, the thing is, we make it where they're not too scared of failure.
Right.
I say
okay.
this all the time. We have to be trying new things and getting crazy and being different. That is our brand. Our brand is fun and different. So if they're not failing with certain things, I'm like, guys, we haven't done something that failed recently. We
yeah.
need to try more new things.
Yep.
Exactly.
Yeah, you can't be afraid to fail. So,
100%.
Okay, you said before that your tickets you're sold out for how long now? You have like...
We've got 32 straight games that are sold out. We have a waiting list in the thousands. Last year, we turned away over 20,000 people. It's what's happened. I pinch myself. It's amazing, but it's built when you have a culture of our people just working so hard to take care of our fans. So
for sure.
I mean, literally, I mean, you know, it looks like our season has very good chances next year will be sold out before the season even starts, which
well,
is just amazing.
You don't seem the type to me to sit back and say, great, we made it. So I'm done now, you know. I imagine you're looking at it and saying, okay, ticket sales were sold out. That's great. That's a huge piece of the revenue pie. But what else should we be doing next? So how else do you guys build the business to its potential if your biggest slice is already kind of covered?
Well, you got to know what your mission is. So, for instance, while we say fans first, entertain always, and that's everything we do, we know that our mission is bigger in the sense that it's the difference that we make in people's lives and it's the impact that we make in people's lives. So what we look at, we don't talk dollars, and our staff came up with this themselves, which I love. It's all about impacts. So we celebrate the amount of people that we impact. Okay. So for instance, this past year, if we impacted 115,000 people at our 26 games or whatever it was, how can we impact 200,000 people? How can we impact 1 million people online? So we've created basically three systems to our business, our games, our events, and our media. And we are going all in now on the events and media. So we're hiring people to bring on more concerts, more festivals, okay. And then the media, how can we actually have, you know, we're hiring content producers. You know, we're going to hire a director of attention. We're going to hire a director of fun. Those are two of our full-time positions coming up. That's going to work with our videographer and our marketing coordinator to get us out more in front of the media because that can impact more people. The next step for us isn't our games. It's our impact of the other 330 days a year, yeah. And that's where we're making all of our strides right now.
So the community now, you feel like they've embraced you a lot differently? Like they're seeing you in a different light than they did originally on the mean tweets?
You know, it's so funny. I speak a lot in the community, and I always open with, you know, thank you guys for inviting me here to speak with you. You know, when we first came out with the Bananas name, I wasn't invited anywhere. And the reality is things have changed. You know, and our staff does a great job getting out there and doing mascot appearances and speaking. So the community, fortunately, has embraced us, yeah. But that gives us even more of a responsibility that we can't take that for granted, and we can continue to put more stuff out there and be more fun and make it a more fans-first experience. So it's actually more challenging now. Once it gets easy, that's when you need to work harder.
Right. So what is game day like? I mean, we've talked so much about your business and how it operates, and yet the reason people are coming to the game is because you're entertaining them and it's a good value for their dollar and for their time. I mean, that's the hardest thing, I think, is to separate somebody from their time and their money and you want to make it worthwhile. You want to give them something that they enjoy and pay back and all that sort of thing. Like you said, your interactions are so important. All of those touch points are so important. So what is game day like? Explain it to us on the outside who have never been to a Savannah Banana game. Games, what makes it special?
Well, I'll frame it in a way too. You know, think about the people that are listening. You know, whatever team you're a part of, or if you want to get in the business, or if you're other business, think about literally what frustrates you about that business, what upsets you about that industry, and then work from there to create the perfect experience that goes against that. So, for instance, what I realized 10 years ago when no one cared about the Grizzlies games was that baseball, to a lot of people, was too long, too slow, and too boring. It wasn't as exciting and interactive.
Yep.
I also learned that most sporting events nickel and dime you. You know, you pay your $10 for a ticket, then it's like $8 for a beer, $7 for a soda, $6 for a hot dog,
yep. And
it just keeps going. So we started from there and said, all right, how can we develop a ticket that includes everything and make it all-inclusive? So we developed our all-you-can-eat ticket, which is all your burgers, chicken sandwiches, hot dogs, soda, water, popcorn, and dessert, birds, cookies, for $15, and that includes
wow. Your
ticket. So we started the point from there. Now you go back. When people first buy from you, what happens? Most times people buy online and they get a boring confirmation email. When you get an email, when you buy from us, you get an email that says, congrats, you just made the best decision of your day. Right now, as you buy your tickets, we grabbed them and hoisted them up in the air. We ran around the stadium doing Gatorade showers. We're celebrating and screaming your name right now. And now your tickets are in maximum security in our vault waiting for you to go bananas. That's the first experience.
Yep.
Then after that, they get a thank you call from our staff member. We do thousands of orders, but every single person gets a thank you call. Not that their credit card didn't work, just a thank you call.
Yeah.
Then, this is all before they even get to the ballpark. Then when they show up to the ballpark and they're driving to our parking lot, what's the first thing they see? Penguins.
I was going to guess bananas,
penguins.
But
they wouldn't work in the South. but we have parking attendants dressed up like penguins guiding
okay.
you to your spot. Does it make any sense? Of course not. But to me, I thought it'd be hilarious to have people in penguin costumes, you know, parking your cars. So then as they park your car, what do they see next? As they're driving, as they're walking up to the stadium, we have our players in full uniform, passing out programs, doing autographs, and taking pictures. As they pass them, what do they see now? It's our 30-piece banana pep band. Yes, we're the only baseball team in the country that has a 30-piece banana pep band, but they'll be playing Uptown Funk and Rocky theme music and Final Countdown as they're walking to the stadium. Then as they get to the gate, what happens? A person in a banana costume rips their banana-shaped ticket to go into the ballpark, and then they'll see the Banana Nanas doing a Kesha dance or a Britney Spears dance right in the concourse, and this is all before they even get into the stadium. And then from there, we have a whole staff of performers, improv people, theater people, people that have never seen baseball games before, and their job is to entertain nonstop, pieing people in the crowd, dance-offs, sing-offs. I mean, we literally have people singing in the middle of the game, and that happens through an entire game. And then when the game's over, we have our entire staff waiting at the gate to thank them for their experience. You know, during the game, we have a breakdancing first base coach that's literally doing Michael Jackson moonwalk during the game. We have a banana baby, a six-month baby that we put in the banana costume, and we lift them up at home plate and sing the Lion King song. Nah, it's the baby. You know, and that's all a part of the experience. And now what we do is we think even more. What is more outrageous? What are things people are going to go home and say, you won't believe what I saw at the ballpark? And when you create something like that, you never have to really focus on marketing at all, because what you've done is create so much attention that everyone's saying, I had the most fun I've ever had at your games. And what you're doing is you're creating an emotion. Yep. And most people just try to just create a product. You got to create an emotion in your fans. And that's what we try to do every day.
See, it's funny because obviously I haven't been to a game, but as soon as you started talking about a penguin walking people, about guiding people to their parking spot, I just naturally smiled, because it's funny. It's interesting. It's something you don't expect. And you are creating that by just thinking a little bit differently and saying, you know what, we could have a guy dressed in a normal, you know, outfit for his business, or we could do this a little bit differently. And it sounds like you take that approach into every decision, is what is expected and what could I do differently? And how am I going to put a smile on somebody's face just naturally? They're not going to be able to control it. It's going to be like they saw America's Funniest Home Video where somebody got hit in the face with a baseball bat. You know, just, you can't control it. It just happens. You just have to smile and laugh because it was completely unexpected.
And that comes from the top. I mean, people will see me. I'm in that full yellow tuxedo, maybe 104 degrees, but I'm out there high-fiving kids every single game. And it's the most rewarding part of my day, of a game day, is out there greeting fans when they're coming into the ballpark and greeting fans when they're leaving. So the challenge that most people do, it's a lot easier. It is so much easier to have regular parking attendance, or not even have parking attendance. It's so much easier to not have your ticket people dressed up in banana costume. It's much easier not to have a 30-piece pep band that literally you have to buy all this music for them to learn to perform. But it tell you, it pays off 100% of the time. So now we got to keep taking it to the next level. Like our penguins, I'm just, when I was talking about that, I was like, you know what? Our penguins should have those like Freezy Pops in coolers that when kids are walking by, they should hand them a Freezy Pop. You know, we should have like an old school, like kid lemonade stand, you know, before people come into the stadium and giving them ice cold lemonade. Like I'm thinking more about what that perfect experience looks, because if you win the perfect experience before they even come into your ballpark, you win. And I think very few people think about that. They think about just the 9 innings of the game and they hope their team plays well.
Does your mind ever stop churning? I'm serious. Like, do you ever have like a meditative moment where you're just like, everything needs to quiet down for a little bit, or is this constant all the time?
My wife will tell you, I sleep very well. Once when I wake up, I get up, I read, I run, I write, I start writing down ideas every single day and I get going. But as sad as it sounds, you know, I'm in my 30s, but by 9 o'clock, I'm done.
I can see that. Thanks to Jesse Cole for coming on the show. I hope you heard what I heard. Yes, Jesse is different, and that label makes him pretty proud, I'm guessing. But he's also driven and qualified and really smart. That's what makes him special, that combination that makes him more than just flash. He's got a lot of substance. How can you listen to that guy and not feel fired up, too? Like, he just doesn't stop. I love it. Thanks for listening. We're getting closer and closer to Christmas, and I'm really enjoying publishing some of our older episodes, some of the best hits of 2018 for this month of December. Next week, Gina Miller, VP of Media and Communications for FC Dallas, one of my favorite interviews of the year. We're going to hit January. So the rest of the month, we're going to do some rebroadcasts, but we're going to hit January hard with new guests, some awesome guests that I've got lined up. So enjoy revisiting some of our best of the year for December, and then we're going to come up with a ton of new great content for January. Hope you enjoyed this episode, and we'll see you next week.